here in the I'm here in a phone booth. This is my new hangout, my new office. And I have it in mind that I probably don't have to sit here very long before somebody grabs a picture of me in here with the door closed and the light on, talking on my cell phone because the payphone doesn't work. And how long do I have to sit here is the question before I become a meme. And actually, there's a security guard here today. I didn't know his one before. And he's paying me no mind, but I wonder if but he's glued to his phone. And how long is it before he does pay me some mind? But what can he do? Get me out of a public phone booth? Uncomfortable as phone booths always were. There's a phone number written on the wall, 466-2482. No area code. A long time ago, I started calling in from payphones. And one of them, it became a fixture in my life for other reasons as well, was one of the booths at the New York Public Library. Semi-famous wood booths at the Schwarzman Branch on 5th Avenue and 42nd Street. That's where I made a lot of recordings for this, for that project. And it also happens to be where I called Verizon to cancel my landline phone at home. I thought they were going to try to force me to stay with them. But in fact, I really didn't even need to call them in the first place. I just ported my number over to Magic Jack, and I thought I would need to call them to, I don't know, confirm it or make sure they weren't going to put a hold on it. And it turns out I didn't need to make the call at all, but it was symbolic that I used the payphone because I didn't want them getting my caller ID and pestering me with come back to us phone calls. Seems kind of silly now, but that was my thinking back then. But one of the things I called in to talk about, or that I endeavored to talk about, that I never really got as far with it as I could, was my freaking days and how I have stayed so connected to payphones and why they have always been a focal point, an almost otaku-like interest of mine. And it goes back to college, I guess. I wanted to say high school, but I'm not sure that's true. I think this all started in college when my sister, yes, it was all my sister's fault. She got a job. She's 5 years ahead of me, so she had a job while I was still in high school. And then during college, I would call her at work because she had a toll-free number, and it was just cool to be able to call her and talk for free us, at least. I would call, and I'd hear this voicemail, automated voice prompt that would be like, you know, enter the extension that you want to call. And I would hear this, and I would think to myself, there's got to be something more than just entering extensions. There's got to be something going on here under the hood. And I was an absolute neophyte to computer systems, voicemail. I didn't know anything about this stuff. But something about the sound and the presentation made me think there had to be something more under the hood. So one fateful day, instead of dialing my sister's extension, I hit the pound button. And the voice said, please enter your mailbox number. And I felt like a gateway had just opened and that the tidal wave was pouring in. And so I just started dialing numbers. And just to show how little I knew about these things, I figured the more numbers I dialed, the better. That's true. But eventually, I don't remember how long it took, probably not very long, I discovered that there were uncounted number of what I came to would later learn were called VMBs, voicemail, short for voicemail boxes. And they were just wide open. I would dial an extension number. After I would hit the pound sign, I would just dial 411, for instance. And I would have easy access to the customer service voicemail box. There's no password or anything. here or there, the voicemail boxes had passwords, but for the most part, it was just open country. So I'd hit 411 and I'd listen to voicemail messages from her. My sister worked at a music publishing company, so the complaints were all usually involved delivery of music that heard. But it was fascinating to listen to this. This was the real world. This was the adult world of having a job and doing business and responding to customers and this kind of stuff. I don't think my sister did any of that stuff, but that customer service line, 411, was a primary source of intrigue for me. Early on, I probably deleted some messages and did some of that kind of shit just by mistake. I never intended to, and for as long as I did this, and this was for years, I was always careful to clean up after myself and not do anything destructive. If I ever did, it was entirely by accident, but that's no excuse because I shouldn't have been there in the first place. But the sand is, I tried my best to not be destructive. Illegal at first, but it came through to me later that it probably was. So I was just exploring this myself for a little while, and I figured I'd get my friends in on it. And we were in college and kept up with each other by handwritten letters and cassette tape letters, but this was a lot easier. And so I gave them the instruction to dial, and then in the meantime, I was hunting out other numbers, and I just started dialing 1-800 anything. Well, not to say letters, but I would dial 1-800-CBS-NEWS, for instance, and believe it or not, that connected me to the CBS newsroom, and same with ABC News. And I call any seven-letter word or phrase just to see what it connected to, and if it had a voicemail system. I figured brand name companies that had those vanity toll-free numbers were the most likely to have open voicemail systems, like at my sister's company. So, I mean, to this day, I cannot see a seven-letter word or phrase without thinking, I wonder what that connects to as a toll-free number. So, at the time, I had a crush on the singer Debbie Gibson, and on account of that, one of the numbers I dialed was 1-800-D-Gibson, and I haven't been able to find any evidence of this number, and I don't think it was one of the numbers that was published for general customers to call. I think it was an insider number for some reason, but whatever the case, whether the number was actually D. Gibson or C. Gibson, I don't remember now. It was one of those two, whatever it was. I got to it on account of my little Debbie Gibson crush. So it's all Debbie Gibson's fault, right? But that connected to the C.R. Gibson greeting card company. But doesn't do that anymore. Connects to some other kind of Gibson, but that was where things got nasty. My friends and I were just talking back and forth for maybe a year on a variety of systems, or a number of companies' voicemail systems. There were so many of them were just wide open with no passwords or anything. And I said we should go over to this one, the Gibson one, because of my Debbie Gibson crush. And also, I didn't know if we were ever going to get busted for this. I didn't want my sister getting involved in any way, although she wouldn't have to. So we were talking shit on the Gibson system, and I discovered that my friends, two of them, had sort of gone off on their own, and they were talking to back and forth on some VMPs that they didn't tell me about. And I was sort of hurt and offended a little, but I never said anything. And I only found it because I had more persistence than most people did. I was just exploring the system, and I found that they had went off to go talk between themselves, and they were talking about stuff that I guess they didn't want me to know about, such as their sexual orientation and how that was changing, and they were maybe a little nervous about it because this was the 1980s after all. So it was on this system where all this stuff was going on that the real bad guys took over. And we didn't know what was going on when one day we called in and the system didn't work and everything had crashed or something, and we didn't know what the hell was going on. And we moved on to another one I don't remember which one. And months later, we started getting calls from the FBI and the Secret Service because those dumbasses who had been talking about their sexual orientation had also left identifying information about themselves, as in, like, exact street address where one of them lived and the phone number of the other guy. And that was the rule, that we don't do that. But they broke the rule. And when the Legion of Doom is who was alleged to have done this, or maybe it was the Cult of the Dead Cow, or I don't know who it was. It was one of those groups with a comic book sounding name. And they had computers and modems and all that shit we didn't have. But they plowed over this one, the C.R. Gibson system, one night. It's never been clear to me exactly what they did to destroy the system, but they did something to mow us down, and they would have had no idea the roadkill they left behind in the form of the three of us and maybe half a dozen other people who got tied up in this years-long investigation into what happened with this system and what did we do to cause it. And it turned out we did nothing to cause it, and it was, shouldn't have been as hard or time-consuming to prove as it turned out to be. But thousands of dollars later, and I don't know, a couple of years, I guess, we were finally exonerated, although it lingered over my head for a long time in my mind because there was a 5-year probation period, and I had to report to a probation officer. That's one of my earliest memories of being in New York, is going downtown to the floor of Manhattan to check in with a probation officer. So all these years later, well, it's interesting to poke around on the internet because I never looked this stuff up. I figured what happened in the 80s and what happened in those VMBs stayed in those VMBs. But there's all kinds of chatter about it, and I might even be able to identify the exact individuals who are responsible for getting us into all that trouble. But I don't need to do that. You know, it is very hot in here. I got to get out. This phone goes up.